McCoy and Kirk are both surveying an Earth-type planet.
Yes, Jim?
How much longer, McCoy?
Oh, about another 30 minutes. I've come across some most interesting organic compounds. Hey, Starfleet was right.
These roots and soil cultures can be a medical treasure house. Any problems there?
No sign of the inhabitants so far. Kirk out.
Kirk goes over to Spock, who's examining some footprints.
Large prints. The ape-like carnivore in the reports?
Yes. It's the Mugatu. No problem, though. Those prints are several days old. They seldom stay around in one place.
Aside from that, you say it's the Garden of Eden.
Or so it seems to the brash young Lieutenant Kirk in command of his first planet survey.
Class M in all respects. Quite Earth-like.
Except these people stayed in their Garden of Eden. Bows and arrows for hunting. But absolutely no fighting among themselves. Remarkably peaceful and tranquil.
Oh, take cover here!
They turn and run in the direction of the cries. Three dark-haired humanoid inhabitants are taking cover amid the rocks and shrubs. In their hands, they carry long-barreled muskets.
Bows and arrows, Captain.
Villagers with flintlocks. That's impossible. They hadn't progressed nearly that far.
Captain, look.
Spock points further down the valley. Four more humanoids, but with white hair and in more primitive clothing, and carrying bows and arrows and spears, are walking warily down the valley in the direction of the hidden gunman.
One of those men walking into ambush is Tyree, the friend I lived with here.
One of the dark-haired men with guns raises his weapon. Kirk reaches for his phaser.
Captain, use of our phasers is expressly forbidden.
Reluctantly, Kirk puts his phaser back on his belt, picks up a rock the size of an apple, and hurls it at one of the gunmen. It lands just behind him. The gunman starts, and his weapon discharges.
Villagers!
The men with bows split up. The gunmen turn and see Kirk and Spock, who take to their heels. The gunmen pursue them, and the bowmen race up the valley after the gunmen. One of them puts his weapon to his shoulder and fires at Kirk. The gunshots alert McCoy.
Enterprise alert! Stand by to beam up landing party.
Kirk and Spock race up. Spock is hit. He falls face down in the dry grass. Kirk runs back to him.
Spock, your phaser.
His uniform is stained with green Vulcan blood. Kirk finds his phaser and turns on the gunman.
No, Captain. I can travel.
Kirk helps him to his feet, and they lurch over to where McCoy is waiting.
Beam us up, quickly.
Now, Scotty, have medic stand by.
The three men disappear in a glistening golden matter stream. The gunmen look around in amazement.
Space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the starship Enterprise. Its five-year mission: to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
Star Trek, created by Gene Roddenberry, starring William Shatner. Also starring Leonard Nimoy as Mr. Spock and DeForest Kelly as Dr. McCoy. A Private Little War. Teleplay by Gene Roddenberry, story by Judd Crusis, directed by Mark Daniels. The landing party materialize in the transporter room.
What happened, Captain?
That projector. Primitive firearm.
Vitalizer B.
They lay Spock on a trolley. McCoy slits open his uniform, and a medic gives him a hypo spray.
Pressure back it. Lucky his heart's where his liver should be, or he'd be dead now.
Not good, sir.
Corylan. What
else can you say? Red alert. Battle stations, battle stations. Go to red alert.
Kirk here.
Uhura, sir.
We have a Klingon vessel on our screen.
On my way.
Scotty.
At the door, Kirk turns back.
Bones, I don't know yet, Jim.
Kirk and Scotty race to the bridge.
Captain, we're holding the planet between us and the Klingons. I don't think they've spotted us.
Make that definite, sir. They're sending a routine message to their home base. No mention of us.
Good. Go to yellow alert.
Yellow alert. All stations, go to yellow alert.
Do you think you can keep us out of their sight, Jekyll?
I can try, Captain.
Message to Starbase, sir.
No point giving ourselves away, Lieutenant, until we find out what's going on.
We can hide for a while, sir, but we may have to go out of orbit to keep it up for long.
Kirk to sickbay.
McCoy here. I'll call you as soon as I know anything. Sickbay out.
So, they've broken the treaty.
Not necessarily, Captain. They have as much right to scientific missions here as we have.
Research is not the Klingon way.
True. But since this is a hands-off planet, how are you going to prove they're doing otherwise?
I left there 13 years ago. Those villages had barely learned to forge iron. Spock was shot with a flintlock. How many centuries between those two developments?
On Earth, about 12, sir.
On the other hand, a flintlock would be the first firearm the inhabitants would normally develop.
Yes, I'm aware of that, Mr. Scott.
And, sir, the fact Earth took 12 centuries doesn't mean they had to.
We've seen development at different rates on different planets.
And if it were the Klingons behind it, why didn't they give them breech loaders?
Or machine guns.
Or old-style hand lasers.
I did not invite a debate.
Uhura, Chekhov, and Scotty look chastened.
I'm sorry. I'm worried about Spock. I'm concerned about what's happened to something I once knew down there.
You have the con, Scotty. I'll be at sickbay.
In sickbay, Spock lies on a biobed beneath a monitor screen. McCoy and Nurse Chapel watch from one side of the bed as a young black doctor looks down at the unconscious Vulcan.
We've no replacements for the damaged organs, sir. He's going to live. His Vulcan physiology will have to do it for him.
Agreed. Sterilite off.
Yes, sir.
McCoy goes over to Kirk, who's watching fretfully, arms folded.
He'll live or die now, Jim. I don't know which.
The other doctor runs a hand scanner over Spock's chest. Kirk watches with narrowed eyes. McCoy follows the direction of his gaze.
Dr. Mbinga interned in a Vulcan ward. He couldn't be in better hands.
Then you and I are transporting down one.
I can't leave Spock at this time.
You just indicated you could. There are Klingons here. If their mission is a legitimate research interest in the planet's organic potential, then you're the one man who can tell me.
And if that's not it?
Then I need help. Advice I can trust as much as Spock's.
I appreciate the compliment, Jim, but...
Bones, I'm as worried about Spock as you are. If the Klingons are breaking the treaty, it could be interstellar war. Kirk to Bridge.
Bridge, Scott here.
McCoy and I are transporting back down. Inform ship stores that we'll need native costumes.
Captain, we may have to break out of orbit any minute to keep out of their sight. We'd be able to communicate a range with you.
Understand. We'll arrange a rendezvous schedule. Kirk out.
Captain's log, stardate 4211.4. Keeping our presence here secret is an enormous tactical advantage. Therefore, I cannot risk contact with Starfleet Command. I must take action on my own judgment. I have elected to violate orders and make contact with planet inhabitants here.
Perfect. Tyree's camp's a quarter a mile away.
Dressed like the bow-wielding natives, they start walking.
Want to think about it again, Jim? Starfleet's orders about this planet state no interference with...
No interference with normal social development. I'm not only aware of it, it was my survey 13 years ago that recommended it.
I read it. Inhabitants superior in many ways to humans. Left alone, they undoubtedly someday will develop a remarkably advanced and peaceful culture.
Indeed. And I intend to see that they have that chance.
McCoy looks around at the rocks and hills.
You coming with me?
Do I have a choice?
As they pass a rocky outcrop, a creature leaps down on Kirk. It's ape-like with white fur, sharp fangs, a horn on its head, and a ridge of horns running down its back. The creature knocks both men to the ground, then leaps on Kirk. McCoy pulls out his phaser, but can't get a clean shot. He throws a stone. The creature rears up. The Yeti-like being vanishes in a flash of green light. McCoy rushes over to Kirk, who's trembling violently.
Contact ship. Took four poison fangs.
Enterprise, McCoy, emergency, come in. Enterprise, come in, McCoy, emergency.
They left, out of orbit.
McCoy gets a hypo spray out of his medical bag.
Jim, there is no antitoxin for this poison. I can only keep you alive a few hours with this.
Tyree, some of his men. Cure.
McCoy looks up. Three of the white-haired, bow-carrying inhabitants are watching them only a few feet away. He gets up and goes over to them.
Are you hill people? Do you know a hunter named Tyree?
The men gaze down at Kirk.
Emogatu attacked him. He's James Kirk. He's a friend of Tyree's.
The leader looks at McCoy curiously.
Blasted, do something! He's dying!
Kirk collapses into unconsciousness.
Take him to the cave. I bring Tyree.
Kirk is carried into the hill people's encampment beneath a stand of trees near the mouth of a cave, while one of the party races off into the wilderness.
Medical log, stardate 4211.8. Kirk is right about the people here. Despite their fear and our strangeness, they are compassionate and gentle. I've learned the hunter Tyree is now their leader. He is expected to return shortly with his wife, who they say knows how to cure this poison. My problem, the captain is in deep shock. I must keep him warm and alive until then.
McCoy kneels over Kirk.
You and your Garden of Eden.
Kirk is lying on a pallet under a blanket of furs. Away from the camp, two of the gun-wielding warriors make their way across a hillside. As they vanish, Tyree and his wife, Nona, appear from behind some trees. He is tall, with the white hair of all the hill people. Nona has long dark hair and wears a cropped top of orange fur, tight, shiny blue-black trousers flared below the knee, and pale boots.
We must obtain the same fire sticks, husband. You could be killing them instead. We could take their houses, their goods.
No, enough. In time, the villagers will return to their ways of friendship.
In time? They kill your people.
She grabs his arm.
I am a Kanutu woman. In all this land, how many are there? Men seek us because through us they become great leaders.
I took you because you cast a spell upon me.
And I have spells that help me keep you. Remember this leaf?
She pulls sprigs of herb from her medicine bag. Tyree snatches some of them and inhales greedily.
The night we camped by the water.
The night of madness.
Oh, Tyree, did you really think that madness?
No.
He grabs her passionately as she rubs the green herb on his naked arm.
It brought up evil beasts from my soul.
Only one lovely beast, Tyree, my huge, angry man.
They kiss hungrily.
Forgive me.
What is it?
There are strangers in our camp. One has taken the Mugatu bite. He dies.
Strangers?
It is said the dying one is a friend of Tyree, from long ago.
That one. Bring him when his head clears.
Nona strides back towards the camp. In the cave, Kirk is sweating and shivering beneath the fur blanket. McCoy watches anxiously at his side. The doctor gets up and looks around the cave. On the floor at the head of the pallet are three boulders the size of pillows. McCoy aims his phaser at one of them.
Oh,
The rock glows red.
The stranger, where is he?
Nona goes to the mouth of the cave. Two of the stones are glowing red hot. Nona sees McCoy fire at a third. The rock begins to glow. Nona stares at the phaser with glittering, avaricious eyes and slips away unseen. Outside, Tyree returns to the encampment and comes hurrying up to Nona.
Nona, where is Kirk? The cave.
Tyree, you wish me to save him?
You must. He is the one I told you of, the friend of my younger days.
My remedies require I know what kind of man he is. All that is known of him.
She stands with her hand on the knife in her belt.
I gave him my promise of silence. He was made my brother.
And I am your wife, his sister. I promise silence also.
Nona!
Quickly! Or he dies.
Her hard eyes look up into Tyree's. In the Enterprise sickbay, Spock lies with his eyes closed. Nurse Chapel looks at the monitor screen, takes Spock's hand, and squeezes it, but drops it quickly as she hears Dr. Mbenga coming into the room. He looks at the screen.
Don't let these low panel readings bother you. I've seen this before in Vulcans. It's a way of concentrating all their strength, blood, and antibodies onto the injured organs. A form of self-induced hypnosis.
You mean he's conscious?
Well, in a sense. He knows we're here and what we're saying, but he can't afford to take his mind from the tissue he's fighting to heal. I suppose he even knows you were holding his hand.
She turns, flustered. He smiles and walks away.
A good nurse always treats her patients that way. It proves she's interested.
In the cave.
I'm Tyree.
And I'm Tyree's woman.
It was Kirk. She will cure him.
Nona kneels by the side of the bed and takes a root out of her medicine bag. It's black and moves as if it were alive.
What's that?
A mako root.
Plant? It moves.
For those who know where to find it, how to use it, how to pick it.
Pulling her knife from her belt, she hands it to Tyree, kneeling opposite her, and holds up her hand. He slices the knife into her palm. McCoy's eyes widen in horror. Nona starts to rock backwards and forwards, her eyes closed, while Tyree beats a drum. Nona writhes, arching her back, her head lolling back and forth. She places the mako root over the tooth marks in Kirk's shoulder and slaps her bloody hand down on top of it. Kirk lies with his eyes closed, gasping. Nona leans over him, rocking ecstatically, her lips shaping words.
My soul. This of my soul. Thine. And thine.
She lays her head on Kirk's chest.
Together.
McCoy looks on amazed. Tyree watches with admiration.
Your soul and mine. Together.
Nona's long black hair falls over her face, her lips part and her breast heaves. Nona flops semi-conscious across Kirk's naked chest. Kirk opens his eyes, frowns, and looks about disorientated. McCoy kneels beside him.
Bones.
strangest dream.
How do you feel, John?
Tired. Very tired.
He smiles.
Did a fine job, huh? Think us. Sleep.
His head lolls to one side. McCoy picks up the Mako root. Beneath it, Kirk's skin is unblemished. The tooth mark's gone. Nona slowly comes round.
I want to thank you for saving his life.
He takes her hand and turns it palm uppermost. The knife cut has vanished.
I would like to learn more about this.
Our blood has passed through the Mako root together. Our souls have been together. He is mine now.
McCoy's eyebrows shoot upwards.
She must sleep also.
Tyree helps her to her feet.
He is hers. When a man and woman are joined in this manner, he can refuse her no wish. But it is only legend.
With his hand around her slim waist, Tyree helps Nona over to another chamber in the cave and lays her down on a bed of wood and hide covered with animal furs. McCoy wakes on a bed of furs in the cave. He looks around. A flaming torch lights the gloomy interior. At his side, Kirk's pallet lies empty. McCoy gets swiftly to his feet. He goes into the other chamber. Kirk is sitting at Nona's bedside, his head bowed forward, his hand over his face. Tyree lies asleep nearby.
Jim.
He helps Kirk to his feet. Kirk straightens up, staring.
What are you doing?
Tyree sits up, instantly alert. Kirk looks over at him and a slow smile of recognition spreads over the captain's face.
Tyree. My old friend.
Yes, James. James, it's good to see you.
What am I doing here? I'm a Mugatu, but I remember.
He smiles at Tyree.
I told him to take me to Tyree's camp. I knew you'd find a Kanutu to cure me. A Kanutu is the local witch people here. They've studied.
He stops as the beautiful Nona gets up and comes towards him.
They've studied the roots and the herbs.
I am a Kanutu, Captain.
He gazes at her.
I cured you.
Kirk turns to Tyree.
My wife, Nona.
Yes, of course, I should have guessed. Congratulations. Tyree, we must talk. Now, the villagers, their new weapons. I want to hear all about that. We must make plans.
Good. It is past time to plan.
Much has happened since you left, James. Come, we'll speak of it.
And of things to be done.
Come.
Tyree ushers Kirk and McCoy to the other part of the cave, but stops Nona from following.
We will speak of it.
Nona watches him go resentfully. On board the Enterprise, Spock lies in sickbay.
Readings are beginning to fluctuate.
Just as they should. This is Dr. Mbenga. There will be someone with you constantly now. When the time comes, I'll be called. As soon as he shows any signs of consciousness, call me immediately.
Yes, Doctor.
After you call me, if he speaks, do whatever he says.
Do whatever he says?
Yes. Well, that's clear enough, isn't it?
He leaves Nurse Chapel looking puzzled. In the cave, McCoy, Tyree, and Kirk sit round a table.
The fire sticks first appeared nearly a year ago. Since that time, many of my people have died.
You say they make the fire sticks themselves. How can you be sure?
I have looked into the village. I have seen it being done.
Have you seen any strangers among the villagers?
Strangers. No.
Can you take us to their village while it's still dark?
Yes. But the Mugatos travel at night also. You killed one. His mate will not be far.
You've seen how these work.
I've seen them also. And I know you have many ways to make your friend Tyree a man of great importance.
Kirk looks at her warily. McCoy catches his eye.
Many ways? What else does she know about us?
Tyree lowers his gaze.
Tyree has told me much of you. Do not blame him. It was the price for saving your life.
We're simply strangers from...
one of the lights in the sky. And you have ways as far above fire sticks as the sky above our world.
You will not speak of this to others.
I will not if I am made to understand. Teach me. There's an old custom among my people. When a woman saves a man's life, he is grateful.
Kirk stands and faces Nona, his eyes guarded. Torchlight flickers.
I am grateful.
A splendid custom, if not carried to extremes.
We once were as you are. Spears, arrows. There came a time when our weapons grew faster than our wisdom, and we almost destroyed ourselves. We learned from this to make a rule during all our travels. Never to cause the same to happen to other worlds. Just as a man must grow in his own way and in his own time.
Some men never grow.
Perhaps not as fast or in the way another thinks he should, but we are wise enough to know that we are wise enough not to interfere in the way of a man or another world.
You must let the villagers destroy us. You will not help your friend and brother kill them instead?
No! I said I will not kill!
We must fight or die. Is dying better? You would let him die when you have weapons to make him powerful and safe? Then he has the wrong friends. And I have the wrong husband.
She leaves. Kirk looks deeply troubled. Tyree turns back to him.
You will help in ways she does not understand. I have faith in our friendship, James. Come, before we lose the darkness.
He goes. Kirk frowns, his eyes narrowed. McCoy gets up from the table and comes over to him.
What's bothering you, Jim? If we find the Klingons have helped the villagers, there's certainly something we can do.
That's what's bothering me. There's something we may have to do.
Kirk and McCoy leave. Later, still dressed as hill people, they creep into the Firestick village with Tyree. A guard with a flintlock patrols the building.
Guard, we must wait.
Tyree, supposing you had to fight, what then?
Jim, this man believes in the same thing we believe in, that killing is stupid and useless.
Tyree.
Tyree looks at Kirk uncomfortably. They creep further into the village. The guard, a dark-haired man dressed in a pale, homespun woven jacket and trousers and carrying a flintlock, walks along a row of adobe-style archways. Kirk leaps out and grabs him by the neck.
Gun, ammunition, die.
Tyree picks up the flintlock and squats by the fallen guard. Kirk and McCoy head further into the village. In one house, a Klingon waits the arrival of a villager.
You are late, my friend Apella.
A quarrel by my people. The division of some skins and a hill woman taken this morning. It's hard to divide one woman.
Give her to the man who killed the most of her people. The others will see the profit in bravery. I'll make a Klingon of you yet.
He picks up a gun.
Your next improvement. Notice what we've done to the striker. See how it holds the priming powder more securely? Fewer misfires. When I return, we will give you other improvements. A rifled barrel.
What?
The Klingon smiles.
A way to shoot further and straighter.
In the darkness, McCoy and Kirk creep up to a row of outbuildings.
Jim. Coal for forge, sulfur for gunpowder.
Let's take a look inside.
They open a door. On a wooden scaffold is a large pair of bellows.
Well, here's your forge.
The bellows feed into a square clay hearth. Kirk searches a workbench.
People's exhibit number one. Chrome steel drill point.
This pig iron is almost carbon free. That village furnace certainly didn't produce it.
He snatches up a tube.
People's exhibit number two. Coal roll gun barrel rod fashioned to look homemade. You're right about the Klingons, Jim.
Make recorder and scanner tapes of everything.
Right. It's a pity we can't include a live Klingon that is about rapid.
They hide, one either side of the room.
I'll show you the method.
I thought my people would grow tired of killing, but you were right. They see that it is easier than trading and it has pleasures. I feel it myself, like the hunt, but with richer rewards.
You will be rich one day, Apella, beyond your dreams. The leader of a whole world, a governor in the Klingon Empire.
The Klingon looks round. Kirk attacks him. Kirk and McCoy run for the door. Outside are two villagers armed with flintlocks. In the forge, Kirk and McCoy take on the armed villagers. They escape. Collecting Tyree on the way, Kirk and McCoy escape from the village out into the dark hills beyond. On the Enterprise, Spock gasps for breath.
Nurse!
Christine hurries over.
Hit me. The pain will help me to consciousness. Hit me.
Hit you? No, I can't.
Blast you, strike me. If I don't regain consciousness soon, it may be too late. Hit me! Harder! Again, continue. The pain will help me to consciousness.
What are you doing, woman?
Leave me alone!
Have you gone,
Doc? Let me go. He needs me.
M'Benga runs in, sits Spock up, and slaps him. Scotty looks on, horrified. Spock grabs M'Benga's wrist.
That will be quite enough. Thank you, Doctor.
Please, release her.
What's this all about?
She was doing as I requested, Mr. Scott. A Vulcan form of self-healing.
As you saw, they must wait until the last possible moment, then fight their way back to consciousness.
Well, here, let me help you, Mr. Spock.
Thank you, nurse. I'm quite fully recovered.
Yes, I see you are.
Kirk teaches the hill people arms drill.
And this is the pad. This is the hammer. The hammer striking the pan causes a spark, ignites the powder, and fires the flintlock.
McCoy comes over.
Now, aim it as I showed you.
The hillman aims at a clay pot.
Hold your breath and squeeze the trigger gently.
The pot shatters.
Well done. Very, very, very good.
Jim, I want to talk to you.
Not here, Bones. In the cave. Yutan. Your turn.
Kirk hands a leather pouch and a powder horn over to another hillman in the cave.
Do I have to say it? It's not bad enough there's already one serpent in Eden teaching one side about gunpowder. You're gonna make sure they all know about it.
Exactly. Each side receives the same knowledge and the same type of firearm.
Have you gone out of your mind? Yes, maybe you have. Harry's wife, she said there was something in that root. She said now that you can refuse her nothing.
Superstition.
Is it a coincidence? This is exactly what she wants.
Is it? She wants superior weapons. It's the one thing neither side can have.
Bones. Bones, the normal development of this planet was the status quo between the hill people and the villagers. The Klingons changed that with the flintlocks. If this
planet is to develop in the way it should, we must equalize both sides again.
Jim, that means you're condemning this whole planet to a war that may never end. It could go on for year after year, massacre after massacre.
All right, Doctor!
Kirk gets up off the table and walks to the far side of the cave. McCoy slumps in one of the wooden chairs.
All right, say I'm wrong. Say I'm drugged. Say the woman drugged me. What is your sober, sensible solution to all this?
I don't have a solution. But furnishing them firearms is certainly not the answer.
Bones, do you remember the 20th century brush wars on the Asian continent? Two giant powers involved, much like the Klingons and ourselves. Neither side felt that they could pull out.
Yes, I remember. It went on bloody year after bloody year.
What would you have suggested? That one side arm its friends with an overpowering weapon? Mankind would never have lived to travel space if they had. No. The only solution is what happened back then. Balance of power.
And if the Klingons give their side even more?
Then we arm our side with exactly that much more. A balance of power. Trickiest, most difficult, dirtiest game of them all, but the only one that preserves both sides.
And what about your friend Tyree? Will he understand this balance of power?
Probably not. But I'm going to have to try and make him understand.
McCoy lowers his eyes uneasily.
I never had a more difficult task.
Jim, here's another morsel of agony for you. Since Tyree won't fight, he will be one of the first to die.
Kirk takes an anguished breath.
Well, war isn't a good life, but it's life. His wife is the only way to reach him. If I tell her we're going to supply guns, maybe she'll convince him.
He pockets a small Mark I phaser and goes out. Spock comes onto the bridge.
Position, Mr. Scott?
Entering distant orbit, sir. Approaching rendezvous time.
The Klingons?
They haven't spotted us yet, sir. Looks like they're beaming someone aboard.
Stand by to signal the captain.
Aye, sir.
Kirk, still disguised as one of the hill people, wanders through the rocky, tree-shaded slopes close to the village. He sees Nona emerging from a pool by a waterfall. He follows her and arrives just as she finishes dressing.
Nona, pardon me.
You are here because I wished you here.
Oh, I thought it was my idea.
Yes, they always believe they come of free will. Tyree even thought the same when I cast my first spell on him.
Nona.
Can you smell this fragrance? Some find it pleasing.
I would like to talk to you.
Again. Some find it soothing.
She wafts the herb.
Yes.
I would like.
Kirk loses concentration.
Happy.
Tyree wanders down the path with a shotgun.
You feel good.
Tyree sees Kirk and Nona by the pool in the distance. She's holding the herb under his nose. Tyree lurches forward a few paces, unable to believe his eyes. Kirk puts a hand to his head and staggers away. Nona follows him.
I feel dizzy.
He looks around and seizes hold of her.
Yes, you are lovely.
Tyree's face contorts with jealousy. He raises the flintlock. Nona parts her lips sensuously.
You're beautiful.
Kiss me.
She winds her arms around Kirk's neck. He takes her by the shoulders and kisses her passionately. Tyree's hands tremble as he tries to squeeze the trigger. He lowers the gun barrel, stares at the weapon in disgust, and throws the gun, pouch, and powder horn onto the ground. As Tyree runs back to the village, a Mugato clambers onto a rock above Kirk and Nona, beating its chest. stoops down and shuffles towards them. Kirk, still drugged by the herb, seems oblivious to the danger and won't let Nona go. She pulls herself free. She falls. The Mugato leaps at her. Nona rolls out of the way. Kirk watches groggily. He grabs the Mugato around its neck. It throws him off and makes another lunge for Nona. She rolls out of the way. Kirk reaches for his phaser and blinks at it uncertainly before firing. Nona watches. The creature vaporizes and Kirk collapses. Nona looks on greedily. She goes over to Kirk and tries to take the phaser from him. He starts to come round. She picks up a rock.
Where's Captain Kirk? Tyree, a fire stick, where is it? There! I left it, there. It's a fine thing to leave lying around. Show us where it is.
As Tyree leads McCoy and Yutan back to the pool, Nona takes the phaser from Kirk and runs off. When they arrive, McCoy doesn't immediately notice Kirk on the ground. Yutan picks up the abandoned flintlock and thrusts it at Tyree.
I do not want it.
Jim!
McCoy runs over and kneels beside him.
Jim!
He picks up the small, round rock.
Who hit you?
Kirk winces and shakes his head.
Nona.
Nona is running through the rocky hills, making her way towards the village. She sees four of the dark-haired villagers out on patrol carrying flintlocks and takes cover behind a large boulder. Waiting for them to come up, she steps out with a proud, confident smile and raises her arm triumphantly.
I bring you victory for Apella!
The patrol leader sneers.
Tyree's woman.
She's a Canoot, too.
We won't trust this division to Apella.
Take me to him. He will have the strength to use this new weapon.
She shows them the small phaser. The leader hands his gun to a companion and grabs Nona. She slaps him.
Touch me again, and this small box will kill you.
Grinning, they throw down their guns and grab her. One of them seizes her from behind and kisses her neck. She struggles. At the pool, McCoy brings out a hypo.
Oh, no, I'm all right.
Kirk reaches a hand to his waist.
My phaser.
They make a brief search.
She took it.
This weapon I bring you is far greater than your fire stick!
With one of the villagers holding her from behind, the patrol leader grasps Nona's face and kisses her. She fights free from both men and pulls the curved dagger from her waist. The patrol leader grabs her arm. Kirk, McCoy, Tyree, and Yutan appear over the crest of the hill. Tyree looks down at Nona and yells.
Nona!
Help him! It's a trap! The woman tricked us!
The leader draws his knife and stabs Nona, then picks up his flintlock. The ball nicks McCoy's arm. Yutan fires back as he, Tyree, and Kirk charge down the villagers, leaping on them, fists flying. With the flintlocks discharged, the villagers use them as clubs. Kirk ducks under a swinging blow and throws a villager to the ground. McCoy arrives, kneels by Nona's body, and checks her pulse. He watches in horror as Tyree picks up a large rock and brings it down repeatedly on the head of one of the villagers. Kirk grabs Tyree by the arms as he's raising the rock for another blow. The normally peaceful man's face is contorted with blood frenzy. Kirk gently takes the rock from him and throws it away. Tyree and Kirk stare at each other. The tribal leader bows his head for a moment, then gets to his feet and runs over to where McCoy is kneeling beside Nona.
She's dead.
Tyree kneels beside the body. She's lying face down in the dust. He places one hand gently on her shoulder and the other on her head, then gets to his feet, hurries over to one of the flintlocks, and picks it up. He turns to Kirk.
I want more of these, Kirk. Many more. You ten! Two of those who killed my wife have escaped. Track them down.
Yutan hurries off after the villagers.
I will kill them.
He and Kirk lock eyes briefly, then Tyree strides away, the flintlock in his hands. Kirk turns to watch him go, eyes narrowed. McCoy finds Kirk's phaser in the dust beside Nona's body. He takes it over to him.
Here.
Kirk looks at it with ironic detachment.
Morrow. In the palm of her hands.
Well, you got what you wanted.
Not what I wanted, Bones. What had to be.
He takes a communicator from McCoy's medical bag.
Kirk here.
Spock, Captain. I trust all has gone well.
Spock, are you alive?
An illogical question, Doctor, since obviously you are hearing my voice.
Well, I don't know why I was worried. You can't kill a computer.
So Spock, ask Scotty how long it would take him to reproduce 100 flintlocks.
Scotty looks at Spock.
I didn't get that exactly, Captain. 100 what?
100 serpents. Serpents for the Garden of Eden. We're very tired, Mr. Spock. Beam us up home.
This audio description was written and produced at IMS for the Sci-Fi Channel.